Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 24, text number 19, and let's see. And we'll do 20 as well, looks like, because there's no purport to 19. Okay, so my eyes are a bit dodgy right now. For some reason, I don't have my glasses. The light's not that great. May I ask someone else to read this? The Sanskrit.
Oh, the Sanskrit.
Yeah, because it's a bit hard for me to read the Sanskrit for some reason. Because it's in italics, and it's like, I mean, I could probably try, but I don't want
to
make a mistake.
Skip to the word by word because it's a very.
You okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay. So translation of purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. No. Eva. Indeed. Etat. This. Sakshatkara. The direct result. Bhumi Danasya, of contribution of land. Yat, which. Tat, that. Bhagavati, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Asesa Jiva Nikayanam. Of unlimited numbers of living entities. Jiva Bhuta Atma Bhute, who is the life and the super soul. Padama Atmani, the supreme regulator. Vasudeva, Lord Vasudeva, Krishna. Tirtha Tame, who is the best of all places of pilgrimage. Patre, the most worthy recipient. Upapane, having approached. Paraya, of the topmost. Sradhaya, faith. Parama Adura, with great respect. Samahita Manasa, with an attentive mind. Sampratipadatisha, which was given. Sakshat, directly. Apavaga Dvarasya, the gate of liberation. Yat, which. Is it Hila? Hila. Hila Nilaya. Bila Nilaya. So that's what the italics is getting me. Because of the H. Bila Nilaya. Of Bila Svaga. The imitation heavenly planets. Aishvaryam. The opulence. Translation. My dear King, Bali Maharaj donated all his possessions to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vamanadev. But one should certainly not conclude that he achieved his great worldly opulence in Bilasvaga as a result of his charitable disposition. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the source of life for all living entities, lives within everyone as the friendly supersoul. And under his direction, a living entity enjoys or suffers in this material world. Greatly appreciating the transcendental qualities of the Lord, Bali Maharaj offered everything at his lotus feet. His purpose, however, was not to gain anything material, but to become a pure devotee. For a pure devotee, the door of liberation is automatically opened. One should not think that Bali Maharaj was given so much material opulence merely because of his charity. When one becomes a pure devotee in love, he may also be blessed with a good material position by the will of the Supreme Lord. However, one should not mistakenly think that the material opulence of a devotee is the result of his devotional service. The real result of devotional service is the awakening of pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which continues under all circumstances. And there's no purport here, so we'll read the next one. Yasya, of whom? Havava, indeed. Shuta, when in hunger. Patana, falling down. Prasikalana adisu, stumbling and so on. Vivasa, being helpless. Sakrit, once. Nama agi abigrinam, chanting the holy name of the Lord. Purusha, a person. Kama bandhanam, the bondage of fruitive activity. Angyasa, completely. Vidanoti, washes away. Yasha, of which. Ha, certainly. Eva, in this way. Pratibandhanam, pratibadhanam, the repulsion. Mumukshava, persons desiring liberation. Anyata, otherwise. Eva, certainly. Upalabhante, are trying to realize. Translation: if one who is embarrassed by hunger, or who falls down or stumbles, chants the holy name of the Lord, even once, willingly or unwillingly, he is immediately freed from the reactions of his past deeds. Karmis entangled in material activities face many difficulties in the practice of mystic yoga and other endeavors to achieve the same freedom. Purport. It is not a fact that one has to offer his material possessions to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and be liberated before he can engage in devotional service. A devotee automatically attains liberation without separate endeavors. Bali Maharaj did not get back all his material possessions merely because of his charity to the Lord. One who becomes a devotee, free from material desires and motives, regards all opportunities, both material and spiritual, as benedictions from the Lord. And in this way, his service to the Lord is never hampered. Bhukti, material enjoyment, and mukti, liberation, are only byproducts of devotional service. A devotee need not work separately to attain mukti. Srila Bilvamangala Thakur said, mukti svayam mukalitanjali sevati sman. A pure devotee of the Lord does not have to endeavor separately for mukti, because mukti is always ready to serve him. Ooh. This is a long report. In this regard, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ancha 3177-188, describes Haridas Thakur's confirmation of the effect of chanting the holy name of the Lord. Keha Bali Namahaiti Haya Papishaya Keha Bali Namahaiti Jivara Mokshahaya. Some say that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is freed from all the reactions of sinful life. And others say that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one attains liberation from material bondage. Haridasa kahena namera edui pala naya namera pali krishna padi prema upajaya. Haridas Thakur, however, said that the desired result of chanting the holy name of the Lord is not that one is liberated from material bondage or freed from the reactions of sinful life. The actual result of chanting the holy name of the Lord is that one awakens his dormant Krishna consciousness, his loving service to the Lord. Anasangika palanamera mukti papadnasa tahara dristanta yuchi soyena prakasa. Haridas Thakur said that liberation and freedom from the reactions of sinful activities are only byproducts of chanting the holy name of the Lord. If one chants the holy name of the Lord purely, he attains the platform of loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this regard, Haridas Thakur gave an example comparing the power of the holy name to sunshine. Eslokera atakara panditera gana sabe kahi tuma kaha ata vivarana. He placed a verse before all the learned scholars present, but the learned scholars asked him to state the purport of the verse. Haridasa kahena yachi suryena udaya udaya nahate haite arambe tamera hayashaya. Haridas Thakur said that as the sun begins to rise, it dissipates the darkness of night, even before the sunshine is visible. Chora preta arakshadira baya hayanasa udaya halidama karma adi prakasa. Before the sunrise even takes place, the light of dawn destroys the fear of the dangers of the night, such as disturbances by thieves, ghosts, and rakshasas. And when the sunshine actually appears, one engages in his duties. Aichi nomodaya rambe papa adirashaya udaya kali krishna padi haya premadaya. Similarly, even before one's chanting of the holy name is pure, one is freed from all sinful reactions. And when he chants purely, he becomes a lover of Krishna. Mukti tucha palahaya nama basa haite ye mukti bhakta na laya se Krishna chahidite. A devotee never accepts mukti, even if Krishna offers it. Mukti, freedom from all sinful reactions, is obtained even by nama basa, or a glimpse of the light of the holy name before its full light is perfectly visible. The nama basa stage is between that of nama aparad, or chanting of the holy name with offences, and pure chanting. There are three stages in chanting the holy name of the Lord. In the first stage, one commits 10 kinds of offences while chanting. In the next stage, nama basa, the offences have become stopped, almost stopped, and one is coming to the platform of pure chanting. In the third stage, when one chants the Hare Krishna mantra without offences, his dormant love for Krishna immediately awakens. This is the perfection. Such a benediction. Om Ajnana Tamaranda Shaganjana Salakaya Chakshushamritam Jinatasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jaya Gora Bhakti Gana Gori Anurpana Sabha Bhakti Mili Mori Bhakti Dehadana. So this is a very powerful promotion of the benefits of chanting the holy name. It's unbelievable. Even when chanting in Namabhasa, where you're committing offenses, you're still getting benefit. And it's compared to the sun rising, right? We all experience that the sun is rising. The light is so powerful that you can see very clearly, even before the sun's actually visible. So, similarly, the holy name is rising in the heart, slowly, 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 as we dedicate ourselves to chanting the holy name. Even unwillingly, we get benefit. Even if we're unwilling, even if we're doing it, chanting the holy name unknowingly, right? There's examples of this. There's other verses in the Bhagavatam where it describes that if one even chants jokingly, mockingly, they get benefit, right? You see some people on Harinam, ah, Hare Krishna, ah, you idiots, right? And they make fun of us, right? Ah, look, you're wasting your life chanting Hare Krishna. Ah, and they mock us by doing silly dances. They try to do the Swami step. They can't do the Swami step. Right? They make benefit. They're actually benefiting. The heart is being purified. This is the power of the holy name. Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda must be laughing when they see these drunken people on the street chanting with us. So that's the mercy of the Lord, that even if one chants jokingly, even to indicate something else, Rama furniture, panorama, right? When you're doing a panorama video, or right, panorama, you're getting benefit there. Rama is meant, is in the name of panorama. And there's even words in other languages that are similar to the holy name. I mean, Krishna, specifically Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is so kind to the living entities, so merciful, that he's giving everyone an opportunity to make advancement. He doesn't want to leave anyone behind. His attitude is everyone has to go back. Like, no one should be left behind. And so he's doing everything he can via the Krishna consciousness movement, via other spiritual movements, to inspire people to chant the holy name even one time to make some progress in spiritual life. This is the power of chanting. So in my book Food Yoga, right, you may think, oh, this book Food Yoga, it's all about eating prasadam, right? Oh yeah, it's eating. Eat your way back to Godhead, right? And that obviously is a reasonable assumption. But I would be lacking and foolish not to include the fact that the tongue has two functions, chanting, vibrating, as well as tasting. So I actually dedicate a whole section in my book to chanting the holy name, because the purpose of my book is to basically demystify this ancient tradition of prasadam culture and make it accessible to everybody. That prasadam is not the exclusive domain of the Hare Krishna movement. No, it's actually for everybody. Anyone can participate in this prasadam culture if you understand the concept of prasadam. Prasadam, of course, means mercy, and it specifically refers to food that has been touched by the glance of the Supreme Lord, has been touched. He's purified it. And therefore it is transformed and not material anymore. In my research of this book, before I actually wrote the book, I used to be like most devotees, thinking, oh yes, prasadam is transcendental. We just have to have faith. Yes, it's just, you know, it's special food. It's been transformed. But I didn't really understand how that actually transpired. What did that actually mean? It's transformed. And then I came across the work of Dr. Emoto in Japan, where he practically proved that water is a carrier of intention, and that when you speak to water and you expose water to certain vibrations, the actual crystal structure changes. And he saw, he actually photographed these changes, and he showed when, you know, you take water from you take water, two samples of water from the same source, and you expose those water samples to different vibrations, there's a physical change that takes place. When you expose it to the holy name of God or some positive sound vibration like I love you or thank you, these are two very powerful vibrations, then the crystal structure actually becomes symmetrical. You have a beautiful symmetrical forming of crystals. When you expose that same water, this sample from the same source, to a negative vibration, I hate you, you are a fool, you are a rascal, something, then the water actually becomes asymmetrical. It becomes not very beautiful to look at, right? So this is very interesting. I thought, oh my God, this is actually proof that prasadam is transformed in the process of offering. As the devotee is taking the food, he's handling it with love, he has a loving intention, he's chanting the holy name, he's preparing it, he offers it with loving intention. So all throughout the process, the life cycle of this food, it's being infected, injected with spirit, with pure intention. And that's changing the structure of this food. And then, of course, you have the Lord looking at the food, and the final purification is there. So the food is not ordinary. That food has been changed. So the chanting of the holy name is the perfection of the vibration function of the tongue, right? We have to control the tongue, Prabhupada says. Spiritual life begins with mastering the tongue. He actually said spiritual life begins with the tongue. He kept it very simple. And I've taken the liberty to adjust that a little bit to make it understandable to people. So I often say to people, spiritual life or evolution of consciousness begins when we master the tongue. And people think, what? What does that mean? Right? It's very fascinating to hear that for the first time. Evolution of consciousness begins when you master the tongue. So they get some thinking. And then I explain the tongue has two functions, tasting and vibrating. And both of those functions have to be mastered in order to achieve perfection in spiritual life. So we have to eat only prasadam. We can only eat food which is of a high vibration. It's pure. It's clean. Physically, subtly, it is purified. That is the only type of food that can purify the taste function of the tongue. On top of that, we need to learn to control the tongue, as in regulating our eating habits, not just eating whimsically, right? Prabhupada said this is also very important. And he encouraged devotees to eat regulated, eat at certain times, not to just eat anything and, you know, pass the excuse that, oh, you know, it's prasadam, I can eat my way back to Godhead. That excuse can pass initially when you've just joined the movement, right? So, if, you know, Dave and Philip and we can give you a pass on that, right? Eat as much as you want, no problem. And your body is young enough that you can digest crazy amounts of food, right? Remember, you probably have an amazing appetite. And I remember when I joined, I would eat two plates of, you know, for breakfast. I would have, you know, one whole plate of khichdi, massive. Then another whole plate of fruit and bread. And I'd eat that, no problem. It was easy. Incredible appetite. And so we give you a pass when you first start. Okay, you know, let him, he's new. Eat, eat as much as he wants. He can get all of that lusty desire out of his system by eating prasadam. And it's magic, it actually works, right? Isn't it amazing how it works? 1 minute you're agitated teenager, you know, agitated young man, next minute you're actually very controlled. And it's, you know, it's a lot easier to master to control the senses because of prasadam. But after some time, you know, you realize, oh, I've got to rein this in a little bit. I've got to control my eating habits. So Prabhupada specifically told the devotees it's very good to eat simply. Not too much puri, not too much halava, not too much sweet rice. You know. And in fact, there's one devotee, Rahini Sutta Prabhu, or Rahini Kumar Prabhu, who was a bit of a hippie when he joined, and he was actually a raw food vegan when he joined the movement. And he said to Prabhupada one day, Prabhupada, I like to eat like this. And I think he was eating like just fruits or something. And Prabhupada says, this is very good. Actually, this is the best diet. He says, you know, eating simple like this. He says, but I cannot tell all the devotees this because they will not follow. They cannot follow such a diet. So I encourage them to eat more sumptuous things. But the best, the most conducive diet is a more simple diet, as simple as possible. Less agitating to the senses. So over time you realize this and it helps you in your devotional service. We all learn this lesson after a few years. Particularly as a brahmachari. I remember I was a brahmachari for 14 years and one of the things, the keys to my success personally was I was also always very careful about what I ate and when I ate. At certain times of the day I wouldn't eat this. You know, at certain times of the day I would stop eating, and I was very careful. I saw other brahmacharis, they would like, it's prasadam, Sunday feast, eat as much as you want. And I would rather, you know, just eat like I'd get a papaya, chop a papaya in half, and fill it with sweet rice, and you know, that was my Sunday feast. I keep it a little bit simpler. So, prasadam is how we control the taste function of the tongue, but the vibration function, that's a tricky one. Prasadam's pretty easy, that's the easy part. But the chanting is much harder. Because it's not just chanting, because obviously we have a life to live, and we can't just be Haridas Thakur and resort to a cave and just chant Hare Krishna all day. We have responsibilities. We have duties in the temple. We have to meet people. We have to interact with people. We have to, if we're a grihasta, we have to pay our bills. We have to, you know, go to the post office, whatever. We have to do things in the material world. So our tongue has to be controlled through chanting Hare Krishna. And Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, the austerities of the tongue are to speak only truthful words, to speak words which are non-agitating, right? Words that are encouraging, uplifting. This is the austerity of the tongue, and of course to chant the holy name of the Lord. So it's important for devotees to control their tongue at all times, not just when they're in the temple chanting Hare Krishna, right? But the chanting is specifically how we purify the tongue so that we don't fall into those bad habits of saying bad things or losing control of our tongue outside of the temple. And we chant as our opportunity to, like, you know, reset basically our tongue. Okay, I'm the master of the tongue, control the tongue, focus on the chanting, control the mind. So chanting the holy name of the Lord is part of every tradition. It's not exclusive to the Hare Krishna movement. Just like I mentioned earlier, that prasadam, the concept of prasadam, is not exclusive to the Hare Krishna movement. Every culture has some concept of prasadam, where they're offering some food to the deities, the gods, right? And then they're taking that food as part of the sacrifice. Many traditions have this. But the more developed tradition is, of course, the Krishna tradition, the Vaishnava tradition. We have a formal ritual, we make an offering many times a day. But the chanting, similarly, there is, every tradition has some form of chanting the holy name. That's, you know, hallowed be thy name in the Bible, and the Buddhists have 108 beads and they're chanting the names of Buddha, and the chanting the names of the Muslims, they're chanting the name of Allah, and other traditions are chanting various names of the Lord. The Lord has unlimited names. So this is something that we tend to forget in our enthusiasm, unbridled enthusiasm to chant the holy name of Krishna. We tend to think that, oh, this is the ultimate, this is the only thing that actually exists, and everyone has to chant Hare Krishna. But that's not what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. Right in the Shikshashtakam, right? What's the first verse of the Shikshashtakam? What is the first verse? Shikshashtakam. Chetadopanamachanam. Bhava Mahadevagni Navarpanam Shriya Kairavai Chandraka Vitaranam Vidyabharu Jivanam. And what's the next verse? The Nannam Bodhi Badanam Pratitam Padipanam Savatmasnapanam Param Vijayati Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So this holy name of the Lord has unlimited manifestations. You have unlimited names, my Lord. Unlimited names. Think about that. Not 20. Not 108. Unlimited. Like waves of the ocean. How many waves in the ocean? How many? You can't count, right? You can't count the waves in the ocean. Similarly, you can't count the names of the Lord. All of them have equal potency. So think about that. So just see that the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is accessible to everyone, in every tradition, in every corner of the universe. And the Krishna consciousness movement is created to inspire, to encourage people to chant the holy name. We prefer to chant the holy name of Krishna, but if they want to chant the holy name of Christ, go ahead. Wonderful. We encourage them. We applaud them. So Prabhupada had this attitude. When he would talk to Christian priests, for example, he would say, there is many examples, but he would say something like to the effect that, oh, you chant the holy name of Christ, we chant the holy name of Krishna, let us cooperate. Like this. He would encourage them in this way. He wouldn't say you have to chant Hare Krishna. So this is important to remember, because we tend to get narrow in our focus and we think this is it. This is the only opportunity for liberation, for spiritual purification in this material world. It's not. We just are trying to create the perfect vehicle for emancipation from this material world. This is the most powerful, effective system for release from this material world. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given, you know, it's the most simple formula possible. Chant the holy name of the Lord and eat and distribute prasadam. That's it. That's his program. That was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's program. Chant the holy name of the Lord and distribute prasadam. That's it. So Prabhupada says the Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. Chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as much as possible, both inside and outside the temple, and as far as possible distribute prasadam. End of sentence. That's the foundation of the Hare Krishna movement. The books tell us and encourage us and convince us to do these two things. That's the purpose of books. That's why books are also considered to be the basis Because this, what I just spoke to you right now, is coming from the book. It's directly from the Bhagavad Gita. So the books are written. Prabhupada took so much effort. Every morning, imagine this, every morning, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the morning, when everyone's snoring, Prabhupada's translating these books. Right? He would go to bed at like 9 or 10 o'clock and rise at 12 or 1 o'clock. So he'd only sleep for 3 hours or something like that. And then he'd start translating. He thought, this is the only time I'm going to get this done. And he would translate and comment. Translate and comment. Translate and comment. Just unveiling this amazing Bhagavatam. For the purpose, the sole purpose of convincing people to chant the holy name and take prasadam, distribute prasadam. That was his focus. And that's the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. That's what this movement's all about. Everything else is to facilitate those two things. And Prabhupada one time in London, he gave the Rath Yatra. He gave a Sunday feast type lecture because it was to the public. And he says, this Hare Krishna movement is very simple. It's standing on three principles. Chanting, dancing, and eating prasadam. So anyone can do this. I'm paraphrasing. But he says, anyone can do this. It's very simple. Who cannot do this? And if you like a little philosophy, you can read the books too. Right. But actually the three principles are chanting, dancing, and prasadam. Like this. So this December, we have a book marathon. Prabhupada was so enthusiastic about the December marathon. And he wanted the devotees to distribute as many books. Sometimes he would criticize devotees who thought they were expert preachers. And he would say, what is your preaching? Just distribute the books. You don't even understand the book so well. Just distribute. And let people touch these books. Come in contact directly with the Supreme Lord. Because this literally is a manifestation of the Supreme Lord, the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavad Gita. The sound vibration of the Lord is non-different from the Lord himself. So when people speak these words, even subtly in their minds, the subtle vibration is also Krishna. So whether you speak it audibly or you speak it in your mind as you're reading, because as you read, you speak, right? You hear the sound, right? When you read, you hear it in your mind. That's a vibration that's taking place on the subtle platform. That's Krishna. So when people read these books, they're associating directly with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And their spiritual life begins. So these books, understand, they're solely created for the purpose of convincing people to participate in the Sankirtan movement, which is chanting the holy name of the Lord and taking and sharing prasadam. That's the purpose of this movement. And that's the purpose of these books. Everything, all of these stories, they're to convince us. Give us example after example after example to convince us that ultimately, when it all boils it down, you boil down the milk, you get rasagula, whatever, you boil it in, you get rasamalai, condensed milk. When you boil it all down, you get chanting the holy name of the Lord and prasadam. And this is what will actually give us release from this material world. And that's all that really matters. Because when we're released from this material bondage, we can serve the Lord unlimitedly, without restriction. Although a devotee doesn't desire liberation, a pure devotee of the Lord wants to serve regardless of his situation, whether he's materially opulent or materially impoverished. A real devotee, because of the intense love for the Lord, will serve anyway. But once we're released from this material bondage, we can serve the Lord unlimitedly, without restriction. So that's a wonderful thing. And then if we desire, we can come back. And we can, serve the Lord in other ways and continue the Sankirtan movement. And apparently there are many great saints wanting to do this, coming back to continue their service to the Lord. So somehow or other we have been blessed by this gift of the holy name and prasadam, the association of devotees. It's such a wonderful opportunity, and we should never, ever, ever minimize that blessing and waste it away. Right? Whenever I come to a temple, and I'm living in Colombia, there's not really many temples there. Associating with devotees, chanting, I realize how lucky I am to have this association. It's such a blessing to have the association. And now, when you're living in the temple, you tend to like forget that and think, and become very familiar. But when you're not living in the temple and you come to the temple and you have this opportunity to chant and associate, you realize, oh, how lucky I am to be amongst these beautiful people, these beautiful souls. It's very special, actually. Of all of the people in the world, somehow or other, you have been chosen to be able to have sangha, association, with other souls who are just focused on spiritual advancement and actually serving the Lord. This is such a blessing. It's amazing. How lucky are we, right? So never ever underestimate that opportunity or minimize that opportunity. It's wonderful. Lord Chaitanya, when he spoke to Ramananda Roy, right? There's a beautiful discussion he had. So I've mentioned this before, but it's really powerful. He said to Lord Chaitanya said to Ramananda Roy, what is the most auspicious thing in this world? And Ramananda Roy could have said, oh, the Bhagavatam. Ramananda Roy could have said, the holy name. Ramananda Roy could have said, Radha Govinda, or Vrindavan, or the Yamuna. Many things he could have said. But what did he say? The only auspicious thing is the association of Krishna's devotees. The only auspicious thing is the association of Krishna bhaktas. Think about that. Because everything else comes from that association. Everything. If you're with a devotee, you have the holy name. If you're with a devotee, you're going to get prasadam. If you're with a devotee, you're going to get the Bhagavad Gita, the Bhagavatam. Everything else comes. So think about that. That's actually the key to success, is Krishna Sangha, Krishna Bhakta Sangha. Hare Krishna. Anyone have any questions or comments? Yes.
You said you emphasized chanting of holy name, and that it's actually all encompassing in a way, this chanting, the main point of our movement. And but actually that's all we have to do, but devotees want to do also other things, their interests,
of course,
material things from before. And you mentioned Haridas Thakur, he also did all the preaching and all the other things besides chanting the holy name. Maybe we can say because with holy name everything comes, so it's from. So what is
Yeah, so the idea is that we have certain skills, we have certain experiences we can share, we have certain realizations we can share through you know, reading the Bhagavatam, through devotional service, we get certain realizations which can inspire others to take up devotional service. We have certain material facilities we can use. So all of these things are meant to be used in the service of the Lord. Until that point where we are retired, and you know, we've basically exhausted our material functions, we are meant to use everything in the service of the Lord. So the chanting is our fuel to perform practical devotional service, whether that be distributing books, distributing prasadam, lecturing, creating bhakti yoga retreats, you know, whatever it is. So many things we can do. So we have to engage our senses in the Lord's service. Otherwise we have so much energy that has to be utilized, particularly when you're younger, right? You know, there's so much energy there. You see these guys dancing, like they want to jump, right? They're only slowing down because of us, right? They're like, they're reining it in. They're ready to like touch the roof. So much energy is there, we have to use it. Direct that energy for various activities in the service of the Lord. That's the beautiful thing about Krishna consciousness, that no one is denied. Everyone can participate. You hear the famous example of Jayananda Prabhu from San Francisco. He famously would be working on the Rath Yatra cart, right, hammering a nail, and then he's under the cart, right? Then he'd see someone's legs. He'd say, "Hey, you!" Someone walking past, not even a devotee, right? He'd say, "Can you hold this for a second?" And he'd give him a nail. And they'd hold the nail and he'd hammer the nail in, and he'd engage them in devotional service. Right, this is the intelligence of a devotee. You're looking for opportunities to engage others in devotional service, because that begins their spiritual life. That's literally planting the seed in their heart, and then some progress can be made. So we should be racking our brains always for ways to engage people in the service of the Lord. That's the proper use of the intelligence, right? Creating different programs, initiatives to engage people somehow or other in the service of the Lord. Prabhupada was very fond of saying somehow or other. Remember this, right? Hear Prabhupada say this often? Somehow or other. Somehow or other. So what does that mean? It means you come up with an idea. Here's the goal. Now somehow or other get someone to that goal. See, he encouraged individuality. He encouraged devotees to use their uniqueness, their unique set of skills and experiences in devotional service. Somehow or other, you bring people to Krishna, you encourage them to chant, you get them to take prasadam. Like that. We're not meant to become just brainless robots in this movement. We're meant to be empowered, creative individuals working towards the whole, working towards satisfying and pleasing the whole, which is the whole community, and ultimately pleasing Krishna. That's the purpose of devotional service. Not to become just, you know, a brainless robot, just a peg in the wall. No, we're meant to always retain our uniqueness. Never let that be stifled. Embrace your uniqueness and use it in Krishna's service. Right? Just like, what's the devotee who does the juggling on the streets and things? Right? That's a very good example. What's his name? Right? Beautiful. So he's doing juggling on the streets, he's entertaining people, right? Like this. And then he's encouraging him in some way to take to devotional service. So he's using his talents. He has this natural affinity to do entertainment. Okay, do it. Do it for Krishna. Like this. So people will get a book, or they'll hear the holy name or something. Or they'll become friends of him, and this way he'll encourage them later on. Just very nice. Any other questions? So I hope I satisfied your needs with my attempt to comment on this purport. It's very beautiful information here, and I thank you for the opportunity. And all glory to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Is this okay? Yeah.